Tonight, shockwaves from President Trump's vulgar Oval Office comments about immigrants from Africa and Haiti.
Mr. President, are you a racist?
The president ducking questions and tweeting denials while a senator who was in the room to hear it unloads about what he said.
Hate-filled, vile, and racist.
Tonight, the backlash around the world. The ice storm sliding across the country with another cold blast on the way and hidden danger lurking on the roads. Staggering new numbers on the flu emergency as health officials warn this year is particularly lethal for children. Big changes coming to your Facebook feed. Why Mark Zuckerberg predicts you'll spend less time on Facebook and why he says that's a good thing. And a little boy's dream come true.
Sweetie, it's all for you.
His emotional reaction to getting his first bed, bringing so many people to tears.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening and welcome to our viewers in the West. President Trump offered something less than a full-throated denial today over vile, racially charged comments about African and Haitian immigrants that he's accused of uttering during a bipartisan meeting with senators yesterday. One of those who says he heard the remarks disparaging those from what the president reportedly called S-hole countries was Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin, who today labeled the comments racist, a charge central to a growing outrage that dogged the president today when he appeared at a White House event honoring Martin Luther King Jr. Our Peter Alexander has much more.
Mr. President, are you a racist?
President Trump tonight ignoring questions as outrage grows after his vulgar insult calling African nations assholes, while suggesting the U.S. should accept more people from places like Norway. This morning, the president tweeting a vague denial, conceding his words were tough, but saying this was not the language used. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin, who attended Thursday's Oval Office immigration meeting, insisting the president did use that word repeatedly.
In the course of his comments, said things which were hate-filled, vile, and racist. I cannot believe that in the history of the White House, in that Oval Office, any president has ever spoken the words that I personally heard our president speak yesterday.
President Trump adding he didn't say anything derogatory about Haitians, but Durbin says also not true, that Mr. Trump asked aloud, do we need more Haitians? NBC News today reaching out to the six other Republican lawmakers in the room, one posting a statement without addressing the issue, two staying silent. Senators Tom Cotton and David Perdue saying they do not recall Trump's remarks. And Lindsey Graham, after confirming the comments to a colleague, noting, I said my piece directly to the president yesterday. President Trump working the phones last night, according to two sources close to the administration, calling friends to assess the damage, one describing his mood as belligerent. Speaker Paul Ryan today delivering this muted rebuke.
First thing that came to my mind was very unfortunate. Unhelpful.
You think you're going to negotiate? And maybe we'll agree and maybe we won't.
Unhelpful to a bipartisan effort to reach an immigration deal. On this, the anniversary of the 2010 Haitian earthquake that left 300,000 dead, condemnation from Haiti's ambassador.
The stigma, the cliches, the stereotypes that revolves around Haiti, we say it got to stop.
Anger echoed by Haitians in South Florida.
To say something like that about other country and other people, he should be ashamed.
The governments of Haiti, Botswana, and Senegal summoning their U.S. ambassadors to clarify the president's remarks. Mr. Trump's comment not the first time he's broken decorum with remarks on race and ethnicity. NBC News has learned last fall the president inquired about a career intelligence analyst who was briefing him, asking why the, quote, pretty Korean lady isn't negotiating with North Korea on behalf of the U.S., according to two officials with direct knowledge of the exchange. The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
Tonight, Martin Luther King Jr.'s nephew, who attended that White House ceremony here today, says he doesn't believe President Trump is a racist, but does think he's, quote, racially ignorant. Lester?
Peter Alexander at the White House. Peter, thank you. Meantime, tonight, as that controversy rages, President Trump headed to the doctor today for his first annual checkup as president, as questions continue to swirl from critics who question his fitness for office. We get details tonight from our chief White House correspondent, Hallie Jackson.
President Trump shaking hands with his doctor after his first official physical as president.
I think it's going to go very well. I'll be very surprised if it doesn't.
Until now, much of what Americans have known about the president's health comes from the campaign.
I have great genes and all that stuff.
like this made-for-TV moment.
It's really brought my cholesterol down into
Dr. Oz sharing details about, for example, the president's weight and blood pressure. In December 2015, the president's personal doctor memorably stated Donald Trump, quote, will be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. He's also the oldest. His doctor told NBC News exclusively,
his health is excellent, particularly his mental health. He thinks he's the best.
The president recently called himself a stable genius, pushing back on questions about his mental fitness. His most visible exercise, playing golf, often seen using a cart. And for his diet, he enjoys steak and fast food.
There's no legal requirement for the president to release his health information.
But it is tradition.
Physical reveals a diagnosis of cancer.
President Bush got a clean bill of health Saturday.
Robert Dalek has studied presidential health for years.
Why do you think it's important, though, for people to know about the commander-in-chief's health?
The president has his finger on that nuclear button, and nobody in the world has as much power as a president of the United States.
Dr. Ronnie Jackson conducted the president's physical today and says it went exceptionally well. He says the president is in excellent health. He expects to share more with reporters next week here at the White House. Lester?
Allie Jackson inside the White House. Thanks. President Trump also decided today to let the Iran nuclear deal stand, but only if major changes are made. He waived sanctions on Iran that were lifted under the deal, but warned this is the last time he'll do so, demanding that Congress and European allies toughen the deal. That gives them until May to comply with an ultimatum from the president to fix what he calls flaws in the deal, or the U.S. will withdraw. President Trump says he's canceling a planned trip to London to open the new U.S. embassy there, and he's blaming it on the Obama administration, saying they sold the old U.S. embassy for, quote, peanuts and built the new one in a worse location. In fact, the relocation was initiated during the George W. Bush administration. The trip was threatening to be a security headache for authorities who feared mass protests against the president. Now to a major story we've been reporting on, the flooding and mudslide disaster still unfolding in Southern California. With time running out, the death toll and the number of missing remains in flux as families endure an agonizing wait to learn the fate of loved ones. NBC's Miguel Almaguer is with survivors and first responders.
Tonight in Montecito, this is what search teams are up against. 30 miles of thick sludge and boulders several feet deep. The unaccounted for missing somewhere here.
I saw the effects of Katrina. We flew during Hurricane Sandy, and it felt very much like those events.
In the hardest hit communities, there's only one way in.
It's surreal.
This is what's left of Vicki Riskin's home.
That's my chimney.
And as close as we can get.
I think the hardest thing is, of course, this is awful, and we're going to be so sad not to have this house. But my cousin Rebecca died, and I can't replace that. She was the most sparkly, joyous person.
After disaster, Montecito is now under evacuation orders. The hills above this city were torched by fire in December. With record rains this week, hillsides cascaded onto communities below, waves of mud washing 3 miles out to sea. Matthew Broughton's wife, Priscilla, is trapped and 8 months pregnant.
The sheriff said it could be 4 or 5 days, a week, before anybody can come and dig us out.
With hope fading, there will be more rescues like this one. 18 victims have now been identified. The youngest, 3-year-old Kaylee Benitez, died with her cousin Jonathan. The oldest, 89-year-old James Mitchell, was killed with his wife of 50 years, Alice. For their families, the closure they've been dreading, found in a community already buried in grief.
Rescue teams say they have searched the vast majority of the debris field, but in neighborhoods like this, where rocks and mud are up to rooftops, going home to home, looking for survivors is nearly impossible. Many are still unaccounted for, but finding them alive in conditions like this would be a miracle. Lester?
The volume of that debris and the size, amazing. Miguel Almaguer, thank you. As we head into the weekend, a major ice storm is taking aim from Mississippi up to Maine. 60 million people are in the path as temperatures plunge again, turning slick roads into sheets of ice. Take a look at what happened on I-40 in Tennessee, a major pileup involving multiple tractor trailers. NBC meteorologist Dylan Dreyer is here with the forecast. Dylan, what can we expect?
Well, there are two sides to this storm, Lester. We have heavy rain up and down the East Coast, but on the backside of it where it's colder, we have the snow falling, and it will continue to fall across Ohio and Pennsylvania, especially as we go into tonight. As that storm continues to move to the north and east, in between the rain and snow, we have the ice. Now, this whole storm system will last until early afternoon on Saturday, especially up across northern New England. So we are looking at about 3 to 6 inches of snow back through Ohio, back through western Pennsylvania. We could see upwards of a foot of snow, especially upstate New York, with some enhancement off of the lake. Ice will be a major factor, a tenth of an inch to a quarter of an inch possible. That could cause very dangerous conditions on the roads, down trees and power lines as well. And we're also worried about a flash freeze. On the backside of this, temperatures are taking a 20 to 40 degree drop within 24 hours. Rochester, New York, today was 59, tomorrow 16 degrees. 59 in Pittsburgh, 18 by Saturday, and that cold air will continue to move east as we go into Sunday.
We enjoyed the break, short-lived as it was.
Very short-lived.
Dylan, thank you. There is a new alert from the CDC today. This year's deadly flu outbreak has now expanded to every state but Hawaii. This flu season is shaping up to be 3 times worse than last year, and doctors warn the strain is taking a drastic toll on children across the country. We sent our Gabe Gutierrez to the CDC headquarters for details.
Your mouth open, take a nice deep breath.
Tonight, for the first time in 13 years, the flu is just about everywhere in the continental U.S., widespread in 49 states, and the rate of hospitalization has nearly doubled since last week. The CDC is now reporting 20 pediatric deaths so far this season, compared to 3 at the same time last year. Jonah Reben was just 4 years old and had health problems, so he was more vulnerable. His family near Dayton, Ohio, is heartbroken.
One of the most difficult things that I've ever had to do was tell my other children on Saturday morning that their little brother wasn't coming home.
This year's dominant flu strain, H3N2, is particularly dangerous for children and the elderly.
Into the lungs.
The South is being hit especially hard. Alabama's governor has declared a public health emergency. And in Georgia, at DeKalb Medical, doctors saw more flu patients in the first week of 2018 than all of last month.
How do you feel right now?
Awful. It's kind of hard. I mean, my body's aching, so it makes it difficult to walk.
This season started early and really has taken off very quickly.
Dr. Daniel Jernigan runs the CDC's influenza division and says this epidemic is likely the worst in 3 years.
The season is peaking right around now. It's happening in a lot of places at the same time, but there's still a lot more flu to go this year, maybe even 13 weeks more of flu activity.
Adding to the concerns, some states are reporting spot shortages of the antiviral medication Tamiflu. Doctors here tell us it's only really effective if taken within the first 48 hours of symptoms. So the best prevention, they say, is getting that flu shot. Lester?
Gabe Gutierrez, thanks. Facebook user is sweeping changes are coming for you in the next few weeks after saying his personal challenge for 2018 was fixing Facebook. CEO Mark Zuckerberg revealed a big overhaul today to the news feed. And if the changes mean you spend less time on Facebook, Zuckerberg says he's okay with that. Our business correspondent Jolene Kent, who covers social media extensively for us, has the story.
Tonight, after more than a year under fire for how it delivers information to users, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announcing what he's calling a major change to your newsfeed. Here's what you can expect to see. More posts, photos, and videos from your friends and family. That means less content from businesses, brands, and fewer news articles, too. Zuckerberg predicts you'll spend less time on Facebook as a result and says this will be, quote, good for people's well-being. The move comes after a barrage of criticism, including Facebook's founding president accusing the company of creating an intentionally addictive product.
It probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains.
And accusations that Facebook did not do enough to stop Russian meddling in the 2016 election, which Zuckerberg addressed last year.
So we're going to bring Facebook to an even higher standard of transparency.
More than 2 billion people use Facebook every month. That's more than the population of China and the U.S. combined. Zuckerberg says he's making these changes to encourage meaningful interactions between people. But in an exclusive interview, former Facebook manager Sandy Perikilis tells us the company is not doing enough.
It's taken, I think, way too long for them to get to the point of even admitting that there is a problem.
And investors may not be happy with the changes to News Feed. Facebook's stock today dropped 4%. Jolene Kent, NBC News, San Francisco.
Still ahead tonight, growing outrage. A hospital accused of dumping a patient out in the cold with nothing but a gown and socks in a video that's gone viral. We'll tell you what the hospital is saying about this now. Also, home is where the heart is. The surprise gift that left one 8-year-old boy overcome with joy. You won't want to miss this.
Sweetie, it's all for you.
We're back now with the growing outrage and the apology over video of a discharged hospital patient found on the street wearing only a thin hospital gown and socks. It happened in Baltimore, and the question so many people are asking is, why did hospital security guards leave a disoriented, mentally ill woman out in the cold? The state of Maryland has launched an investigation into this alleged case of what's being called patient dumping. We get more now from NBC's Tom Costello.
Are you okay? Are you unable to speak?
The video posted on Facebook captures a clearly distressed young woman wearing only a hospital gown and socks in freezing temperatures just outside the University of Maryland Medical Center in Baltimore.
Wait, so y'all just gonna leave this lady out here with no clothes on?
Psychotherapist Amamu Baraka began recording when he saw hospital workers dump the patient and leave.
Individuals have left a patient half naked on the city streets, and it's about 30 degrees out here right now.
Baraka called an ambulance, which took her back to the same hospital.
I share the community's shock and anger at what occurred.
Now the hospital is apologizing.
But where we absolutely fail, and where we own that failure, is in the demonstration of basic humanity and compassion.
It's the latest so-called patient dumping example. Hospitals discharging at-risk, often poor patients into the streets. Cases in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Washington, D.C. have resulted in lawsuits and terminations. We talked via Skype to the man who took the video in Baltimore.
I do believe that this is happening far more frequent than anyone even imagines.
Tonight, the patient is back with her family, but the question remains, how did a hospital allow this? Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
We're going to take a short break, and coming up, no pen, no problem. Major credit card doing away with a hassle at the register. And he's only 20, but now he's set for life, the country's newest mega millionaire. When we come back. Tonight, Visa says it's ditching the signature. The credit card company says starting in April, if you use a Visa chip card in a store that has a chip reader, it won't require you to sign, though it will still be optional and up to the store whether you have to. The announcement follows similar moves by American Express, MasterCard, and Discovery. History has just been made in Saudi Arabia. For the first time ever, the kingdom has finally opened a major sporting event to women, though they did have to sit in a segregated section during a soccer match. It's the latest reform for the country where women still face many other restrictions. And the mystery winner of last Friday's $451 million Mega Millions jackpot has now come forward, though not before the cameras. He is 20-year-old Shane Misler of Port Rico, Florida. Misler opted to take the one-time payout of $282 million. He plans to use the money to help his family and, quote, do some good for humanity. So good for him. When we come back, that heartwarming bedtime story, a little boy getting the surprise he's always wanted. Finally tonight, a bedtime story we can all enjoy, about a little boy who discovers the comforts of home after being without a home. His reaction to the things most of us take for granted will warm your heart.
All right, go ahead and open them.
The big surprise for 8-year-old Dyer Neely.
What do you think?
Was almost too much to bear.
Sweetie, it's all for you.
His very own bed, the first he's ever had.
I wanted the covers, but I didn't know the covers was going to come with the bed.
Dyer has been homeless since he was 2 years old, when his mom, Deanna, lost her job and their apartment. Last year, they moved into a shelter, hoping to qualify for public housing in Detroit.
He has started having a little trouble in school once we moved to the shelter. But I had to explain to him, we have to do this in order to get our own home.
In November, they moved into their new house, but had no furniture. Dyer slept on a pile of blankets.
And here's your dining room.
the table.
Furnished by the nonprofit Humble Design.
We transform their house with donated goods from the community. We furnish the entire house from top to bottom. We make it their home.
It's a start of a new life. Deanna plans to go to nursing school.
As a mother, I did what I was supposed to do. I kept my promise to him and fulfilled our dreams.
Little Star Wars there.
For a boy who never imagined a room of his own.
Okay, time to go to bed.
Going to bed is a dream come true. Sleep tight, little man, sleep tight. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Friday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.